Hello and welcome to In Her Corner, a podcast dedicated to celebrating and empowering women working at every level of sport on and off the field. I'm your host, Lisely Satali, and today I'm really excited to introduce a woman who's a real pioneer in her field. Most people often use the word pioneer, but I think there's very few who can claim that right as much as Catherine Bondmuir, who is the founder and the CEO of W Series, which is the world's first ever women's single-seater car racing series. How are you doing, Catherine? Welcome to In Her Corner.
I'm very well, and thank you very much for having me.
No, it's an absolute pleasure. It's great to have you on here. And as I alluded to there, you're somebody who's definitely used to doing world first. So I want to take some time here to dive into your career and what led you to set up the W Series and also to talk about what the sort of big exciting things that you guys have coming up over the next 12 months are and how you really built your career to get here. So starting off with, how did you establish W Series? What was that driving force, pardon the pun, that got you to do something truly disruptive in the motorsport space?
That's quite a long answer.
That's good.
I know that we're going to talk about my career, so maybe we'll do that a little bit later. But just to take you into sort of the end of it, which was my career finished, or I thought it did, at 45, because I had my first and only child when I was very late in life. Had a period of time where I thought I probably wasn't going to have any children. Wow. And when Hamish came along, nothing was more important to me. So basically, yeah. I stopped everything and I stopped working, and I had a couple of absolutely magical years. But I didn't know that there was a sweepstake amongst friends as to how long it would be before I would start working again.
Yeah.
And sure enough, after a couple of years, I wanted more, than just being a mother. And I was trying to figure out what I wanted to do. So I'd historically been a solicitor and a corporate financier. And I knew I didn't want to go back to be an advisor again. So I was trying to figure out what I wanted to do. And it was at that point that I was having a drink with a couple of friends who talked about a single-seater women's motor racing series. And it was literally from that where it started. And to begin with, I thought, oh, this sounds like an incredibly interesting idea. And then after doing some research, I thought it was probably a poor idea that didn't have any legs, because if men and women can race equally, then there's absolutely no need for a women's series.
Yeah.
And then if you looked at the previous 8 years, and I looked at every single seater series that was happening across the world, if you plotted the numbers of women that were racing year on year, the trend was that the numbers of women were actually going down.
Yeah, so it wasn't the same.
Yeah. Absolutely. And this was exactly at the point where there was much greater interest in female sports that were traditionally male. So I'm talking soccer, rugby union, and cricket. They were starting to gain significant traction. And I just looked to motorsport and, you know, that their situation was, it was actually getting worse. So that therein was born the idea. And obviously there was a significant amount of work to get it from that, you know, initial conversation to raising a massive amount of money to get us to the grid in Hockenheim in 2019.
Yeah, no, that's extraordinary. And I love that it's one of those ideas that is born from a simple conversation with friends at a dinner table. And before we sort of go into the bones of the W Series, what I want to do is I want to track back here and go into your career in sport. What is it that attracted you to actually work within the field of sport? Because you mentioned there that you were a solicitor, and then before you were a financier in corporate finance doing M&A sort of deals. And that world, you did quite a lot of seminal deals actually in sport, such as the, you know, overseeing the sale of Chelsea to Roman Abramovich. So how did you get to even that, which is a really high level, right, to be in, again, an incredibly male-dominated, typically? How did you find yourself in that space?
Well, I was, I became a trainee solicitor right at the beginning of the 90s. So I've been working for over 30 years now. And I just thought I'd become a solicitor, didn't know what I would specialise in. But actually, when you're a trainee solicitor, you spend 6 months in different seats, so in different parts of the firm.
Yeah.
Just having experience of different areas of law to see what you're like and, you know, to train you. And so you become a rounded professional. And it was in my second 6 months, I was actually bullied incredibly badly. And bearing in mind, this was in the 90s, at the beginning of the 90s,
yes,
where there were no laws in place at all 30 years ago about bullying.
Yeah.
You know, it was basically all in for themselves. And I was being screamed at and shouted at, and it became properly and very, very unpleasant in a number of ways that I don't particularly want to talk about now.
Of course.
But as a result, I had to take time off work because I think the stress caused glandular fever in me.
Yeah.
And in my time off, I thought, well, I'm not going to go back there.
Yeah.
And I thought about giving up the law. But at that time, we were in mid-recession and there were just no jobs around for people. And so I was in a job and therefore believed that I had to stay in it. But my view was, well, I've got no interest in this. I hate it. My great passion in life is sport.
Yeah.
So what I'm going to do is specialise in sport.
Yeah.
And also at this time, sports law wasn't a really established area. It was just starting, the shoots of sports law were just starting to grow, really.
Yeah.
And to that extent, I, you know, wrote articles for, you know, the Sunday Times on sports law. I did one or two, I can't remember, for the Independent or the Independent on Sunday. And then I started to, you know, to get some traction. I was a founding member of the British Association of Sport and Law. I was on the board of that. And so it was really just as it was sort of hitting things, which is the story of my life, maybe, you know, it's just at the right time.
Yeah.
And you grow with it. But it was very much I got involved in sport because in my head I knew I was going to leave the law very quickly. So I may as well do something I enjoy before I left. And of course, the sports law, you know, became a very exciting and interesting job.
Area. Yeah.
Yes, I got over, you know, the upset that I had and you know, moved on from there. But it only happened because I'd had a very bad experience.
Yeah, no, definitely. And I'm sorry to hear about the bad experience you had. Unfortunately, it's a pattern that you still see in a lot of fields, particularly in professional fields where it's not spoken about. But I just want to sort of track back to something specific. And I think this is probably something that's defined your career and spaces you've occupied. You have a mindset where you find something challenging and you turn it into a positive opportunity. Is there something in your life that has shaped that way of thinking and that particular way of looking at things, that when you get into a jam, instead of kind of falling apart, or as you say, running away from it, you look it square in the face and you find a different way in? Is there something in particular that has made you that way? Because I find it quite interesting that there's a few things I've researched about you in your career that seem to always, that you turn these difficult.
I'm not sure my mother would agree with you.
We should dial her in.
Two fingers up to a lot of people who challenge me, so I'm not sure that's the case at all. I do believe that life was never meant to be easy.
Okay.
But I've never necessarily taken the path of least resistance.
Yeah.
And I think that, you know, pain and toil and effort and hard work are part of life. I don't think that that is not, that it is an unfortunate byproduct of life. I just think it is part of life.
Yeah.
And therefore, I think a challenge is good. And one of the extraordinary things about being involved in W Series is actually just genuinely making a difference.
Yeah.
And not in a sort of sense of, I'm holier than thou, or, I'm worthy, but it does, when I first saw 18 female drivers on the grid, I mean, my heart sang. And, our last race in 2019, which is our most recent race at Brands Hatch, it was, after my wedding and having a child, it was unquestionably the best day of my life, because just I was inundated by people saying, this is an incredibly important day in British sport, in motorsport. People were saying this is, such a wonderful family atmosphere. This is a magical atmosphere. I've never seen anything like this before. And there was this great sense of camaraderie between not only the people at W Series, but also all of our fans that came to see us. And, we believe, we want to have very close contact with our fans, and we would always encourage that. And therefore we had, immediate payback immediate input from them.
Yeah, no, definitely. And that moment, I guess, that you're talking about when you're watching the lights out and you're watching those women race, I think it's important to kind of take it back a little bit there about the difference that W Series make. Because I found it really interesting, having grown up watching F1 and being a huge fan of that, and seeing the huge barrier to access that they is in F1. One of the things that I found really interesting when I started to learn about the W Series and how you establish it was the fact that the key barrier to entry, which is the financing that drivers have to raise for themselves through sponsorship and teams, that is not a requirement in the W Series. You fund everything for all your drivers. And I found that quite extraordinary, because was that something that you intentionally set out that you definitely wanted to do in order to make it work? Because that obviously makes it much harder, right, to get everything up and running, particularly in a women's sport.
If we were going to be true to what we said we were going to be, which provide a platform for women to get more experience and to go on into the higher echelons of motorsport, we had to attract as good a motor racing drivers as we possibly could.
Yeah.
And that meant that for us, our ethos is ability is the only thing that matters.
Yeah.
For all the people who know about motorsport, especially places like Formula One, that is not necessarily the case. It can be, the story of Lewis Hamilton is an exception rather than the rule.
Yeah, for sure.
So we care very much that W Series is a meritocracy.
And
therefore, we couldn't ask drivers to come with any money or any sponsorship, because we wanted to pick the drivers solely on ability.
Yeah.
So that was the important pillar for that. So what was interesting is about our meritocratic ethos was that forced us to do two things. One is to say that we would pay for all of the expenses of the drivers, and therefore we weren't going to create some sort of market which would mean that the top 20 richest drivers would be able to join us. And then second is that the cars would be, identical as possible, and that there would only be, small setup changes that could be made to the cars. And therefore, both of those pillars have become cornerstones and part of the DNA of W Series. But they have been seen to be the two aspects, really, as well as having, women only, is to be groundbreaking in motorsport.
Yeah, yeah,
and,
no, for sure.
I wonder whether in the future is that other people will follow that too.
Yeah, you know, definitely. I mean, the only other models I've seen of this kind of meritocracy in terms of how they set up and the remuneration and the financing has been a football club like Lewis FC. I don't know if you're aware of them. They pay both their men and women's team the same through the fact that they generate revenue as a club and then split it rather than going down the, let's say, traditional model of global football. And when you were setting up W Series, I remember distinctly quite a few female drivers actually coming out and criticizing the move and saying that for them, it was actually a form of perpetuating the segregation they already felt. How did you deal with that? Because I'm sure you must have perceived that as a challenge to why the W Series needed to be how it is. And it's been interesting for me to see the success that a driver like Jamie Chadwick has had actually to buck that trend and criticism. Is that, do you think it was a result of people being closed-minded and not being able to see the potential for actually helping to further accelerate that decline that you were that decline you talked about at the beginning? Or do you think that it was just the case that at that time, not enough people cared to engage with everything you were building, so didn't understand the intention?
Well, first of all, I would like to say that all of those critics did us an enormous favor, because when we launched...
Yeah,
there were a few female drivers who were critical, but that it was that criticism that created the headlines. So you know, there's just a new women's series would have lasted a day.
Yeah.
We had new women's series, and then on subsequent days we had, you know, so and so, you know, spoke out and said it was a black day for motorsport and all of that.
Yeah.
And there is nothing like a bit of controversy to keep us in the sports pages.
Headlines, yeah.
And so therefore that helped us. I mean, I think that the critics have fallen into two distinct camps. The first camp being we just disagree in principle that women and men race separately. I mean, my response to that is, well, let's look at motorsport over the last 45 years, which is the time since a woman has driven in Formula One, and say, actually, it has been broadly a male sport. You know, you can say, but it's open to women. Well, if a woman hasn't driven in a Formula One race for 45 years, I would have the argument of, well, it's not really open to women, is it?
You can say
it is, but you actually have to change the fundamentals and the structure of sport to be able to change that. And then this second group of women, I think they were critical of it because they just didn't like the sound of it. And there were a number of women who, you know, sort of Abby Eaton, who's racing with us this year, she has stood on platforms with me and said, you know, well, I got it wrong. I criticized it to begin with. But actually, once I saw them race, they weren't minimizing females' worth, actually, to the contrary. And I mean, for anyone who knew me is that, the last thing that I would ever do is sort of sexualize a woman and make, you know, sort of a bunch of female drivers, you know, sort of wear things that they would be uncomfortable about. I mean, or anything. I mean, it's just, you know, for me, it is all about the sport and it is all about promoting women. And, you know, Charlie Martin, she said she didn't like the discrimination, but I know that she has come round. You know, she raced with us in the esports. And I think... just because we put on a very professional show, I think that has persuaded people that it is worth watching. But it isn't just the professionalism. It is actually W Series was just great sport.
Yes.
You know, there have been some of the races, there were some fantastically exciting races, you know. You know, the final race at Brands Hatch, you know, you thought it would have been a shoe-in for Jamie.
But it wasn't.
Jamie could have lost that. I mean, could have lost the championship easily. And at a certain point, you know, I thought she was going to. You know, it was just high tension, fantastically exciting sport. So
yeah.
I think what W Series became is a sport that just wasn't about a mission. It became a great sport in its own right for the same reasons that everyone else watches sport.
Yeah, yeah, no, for sure. And it's interesting you say that, because I actually think all sports, if you look really fundamentally at where they're born, and in particular where great teams that are now sort of, let's say, cultural icons are born, it actually does start with a mission. It's just what that mission is and stands for. And I think when you look at great big football clubs these days, they start off as community clubs that brought together working class communities. Then you look at others, teams, and you look at something like the NBA, that WNBA, that has really been built around values and campaigning for women's rights and gender parity and racial inequality in the US. So, but those are also, as you say, great sports to watch just purely for the athletic high performance. But I don't think without the principles that sit behind them, that mission, that purpose, that they attract that bedrock of fans that help to grow their popularity and their, let's say, their credible brand love, because you need that. I think you need that. And I think it's great that you were so unapologetic and really firm to sticking with that. And when you are in these sort of, let's say, difficult positions where you've got that very public, loud scrutiny that you talked about then, you welcomed it as being quite a good PR vehicle for you. But in those quiet moments where I'm sure it gets quite intense and gets quite sort of, let's say, difficult to hold, how do you cope with that? How do you cope with that niggling doubt that, I don't know, maybe I'm speaking for you. Maybe there was no niggling doubt despite the naysayers. First of all, was there doubt just when the naysayers were coming out? Was there any doubt in your mind, or were you quite, you know, sure that you were onto something?
I was absolutely sure we were onto something. The doubt was that I didn't know whether the sport would be good. Because okay. We can control everything.
Yeah.
But we can't control what happened on track.
Yes.
And that was the constant doubt of saying, actually, will they race well together? Is this, you know, we were told by people, well, you know, it's going to be the Beitzker and Jamie show. There's going to be no one involved. Yeah, we only had six races, but we did have five different winners of races.
Yeah,
so
yeah.
That was, but also it was just, you know, it was as good as any other motorsport. And that was an enormous relief, I have to say, because until you watched our drivers race, no one knew. You know, there were lots of sexist things that people were saying. Oh, you know, that, you know, the female drivers won't be as brave as the boys. They won't be overtaking into corners. They won't be rough and tough, you know, because they're women, you know, because they may have children in the future. You know, they're not going to take the risks the boys take, et cetera, et cetera. And of course, all of that's, you know, a load of nonsense.
Yeah, absolutely. I watched some of those races. I am somebody who is terrified of fast vehicles, which everyone finds really funny because I really enjoy motor racing. So I could never imagine doing what they do. And I just absolutely admire them for it. And I think another thing that really struck me immediately, kind of when I got, you know, to know a little bit more about W Series, was the variety of backgrounds that your drivers come from, right? When you look at most, if you look back to your point about the last 45 years of F1 and generally motor racing around the world, let's not just, you know, single out one category, but there is a distinction of the type of backgrounds and racial groups and socioeconomic groups they come from. But in yours, it's super different. Was that, again, do you think that because of what you were building and the fact that you made it purely so easy to enter without all of that, do you think that is what has helped you to achieve the level of diversity you have in terms of the makeup and nationalities that you have in your category?
It was complete luck. So we had, so there is a bias towards British drivers, but, and there is, and there has been comment that there is a bias towards, but when I say there's a bias towards British drivers, we have more British drivers than last year. So last year we had five, this year we have five. This year we have three Spanish drivers. But you know, last year our drivers were from 15 different countries. And that is something that we only chose the drivers that were the best drivers. And the fact that they came from 15 different countries to us was obviously an enormous plus. In an ideal world, would I have had 5 British drivers? No, because I would have preferred a driver from China or from somewhere else. But yeah, you know, it is just, I suppose, just where the depth of talent lies. So yeah, I suppose that's just another thing that, that we couldn't control and that worked out very well. But I mean, one thing that was so extraordinary about the drivers that I could never have predicted was the real camaraderie between them. And obviously, they're highly competitive, you know, on the track.
Yeah, but yeah, they're athletes at the end of the day. They're athletes at the end of the day. They're going to be competitive.
But
yeah,
they're enormously great friends. You know, we all predicted that they would start, you know, they're great friends. We saw that they were great friends. Yeah. And we thought that rivalries would start and increase throughout the year, because that's what the boys are like.
Yes,
but
yeah,
people who were involved with W Series, who had been involved with, the male side of the sport, they said that they've never seen anything like it at all. Mm-hmm. And that actually the males between themselves were much more competitive off track than the women were.
Yeah, you definitely see that in a series like Drive to Survive and other series that the likes of IndyCar have put on and NASCAR over the years that I've watched. I definitely do see that. And another point that I just wanted to pick up there was, now that obviously there's such a huge focus in challenging the whole of the sports industry, and I think in particular around how they're much more intentional about bringing in people from different backgrounds who are often underrepresented historically, is that something that you're looking at? Obviously, I know you're very young in your years, but is that something that you're looking at ahead as you continue to recruit and grow drivers and make programs now to try and feed in more drivers? Is that something you're going to be more intentional about, making sure you're recruiting from different countries, from different racial groups, from different social classes? Is that something that you're starting to build towards?
Well, we're looking at sort of setting up junior series in different countries.
Okay.
And that will help that. We will always insist that that in any W Series event, wherever it happens throughout the world, is that the driver doesn't pay for it.
Yeah.
And that is the only way that we believe we can get social economic parity.
Yeah.
And apart from that, I think market forces need to take it, you know, need to take it on themselves. We are not going to positively discriminate, but obviously we would love to set a national W series up in, you know, places like China. You know, it'd be great to have an African one. You know, it would be, and thereby you encourage people from different racial backgrounds. But where the whole world is on motorsport, so different countries are obviously at completely different levels.
Yes.
You know, some countries are more disposed to, you know, having motorsport, and you only have to look at F1 and the nationalities of those drivers, and they are actually broadly reflected in W Series as well. You know, so obviously Scandinavia is big, obviously Britain, you know, Holland,
Germany, Australia, Germany, Italy,
yes, and there are Canada, you know, there are advanced motorsport countries, if you may, but I think that Asia and the Middle East will be massive growing areas for us in the future, and therefore we will have a greater diversity just because we will be in those countries encouraging younger women to take up motorsport.
Yeah, it's interesting there that you said about, you know, the positive discrimination thing, and I want to just sort of sit with that a little bit, is that people immediately assume that in order to create a really great, reflective, diverse, and inclusive category of anything, workplaces, etc., you have to positively discriminate. And I often challenge that. I say it's about what you invite in, right? So I'll just put it simply to say, why is it so hard for people to just say, you know what, we would really love, we've identified that we only had one Black female make the final cut in Naomi Schiff, right? So we would love to go and make sure we have more. We identify that we would see that in Asia, there's a gap to really grow racing. And we think it could be great given the huge population there is, the access to technology, huge urban populations. And we'd love to invite people from those categories. What do you think that makes people tense about having that very direct and open line to say we want that?
My answer to you is I don't really know. I mean, I'm working very hard on equality, diversity and inclusion in motorsport because I'm actually chair of that committee at Motorsport UK. So I am on a daily basis.
That was why I was asking you the question, because I was trying to understand if you gleaned from the membership there, was there something they were finding that if they'd gone out in the past to, you know, purposefully try and recruit someone from a particular background that they'd met resistance or that it didn't go well? That was all just trying to understand from those learnings that you've gathered from that experience.
My view is that EDI is important for, you know, successful businesses and for the success of sport going forward. You know, we as a moral stance, I think, well, not anyone, but my personal view is that you want your sport to be representative of society as a whole.
Yeah.
And therefore, you want to be welcome or be welcoming and open to everyone in society. I think that's a slightly different question from, you know, what W Series is doing and where we are. So in order to for W Series, in order for us to become, you know, fully diverse across the world, there's not an arrogant stance of saying you have to come to us. Actually, our view is, well, we're going to try as hard as possible to go out to you. You know, we're going to sell to you. We are going to, you know, be outreaching. We are going to try and get, you know, junior W Series into your country because we want to persuade you that is good.
This is a great sport. You want to make sure that it's an attractive sport. It's exciting, and that as many people who want to play something like football want to also play and get involved in W Series.
Absolutely. And, you know, historically motorsport, certainly in the UK, has been, you know, the preserve of, you know, white middle class males. And that has changed significantly as society has changed significantly, you know, in the past 20 years. But I think there is a very fast change into, you know, a greater racial diversity, but also, as we've touched on before, it is important to be attractive to all social demographics. I mean, at the elite levels of motorsport, you don't have a story like we had with Alice Powell, who years ago, so about 6-7 years ago, she was the first woman to get GP3 points. So that's now International Formula 3 points.
Yeah.
And, you know, no woman has done that for many, many, many years. You know, the week before or days before our first race, and actually throughout the season, but 2 days before the first race, she was working with her father, who's a builder, moving urinals out of lavatories.
Yeah.
You know, and that is, and, you know, that juxtaposition, I find, you know, one interesting, you know, and on one hand, if you knew Alice, you would find it amusing too, by the way that she talked about it.
Yeah.
But, you know, she said after, because she podiumed in our first race, and she just said to me afterwards, thank you for making me feel like this again. But sport has got to be open to all. You know, it is a brutal and I know sport is brutal and cruel because it is about the success of the best.
Yeah.
But it is incredibly cruel when your dreams are taken away from you because you just can't raise the money. Because her talent, you know, was never in doubt. And it was such a shame because, you know, she's missed key years in her career.
Yeah.
But who knows what she could have achieved in those intervening years.
Yeah. Had money not been a barrier, had money not been a barrier and stopped her from building on from that success that you talked about in Formula 3, yeah.
Yes. And therefore, it is of crucial importance that we do that both W Series, but also motorsport, you know, doesn't remain an elite sport and tries to attract as wide a group of people as possible. You know, and Lewis has been fantastic at, you know, is talking about inclusivity. Yeah. And then, you know, stamping his foot about it and saying, guys, you know, actually, I'm going to set up a commission because I want things to change.
Yeah.
But I think he is, well, certainly with me, he's pushing against an open door because not only is it morally correct, but actually for the future of the sport, you know, we need to make it as diverse as possible.
Yeah. It's imperative for your survival and growth. Absolutely. Yeah. Absolutely. Yeah. No, it's really great to hear that because I think one of the things that happens to people who often aren't socialized, let's say growing up in motorsport, et cetera, they see certain headlines and they see certain things. And I think it's important for them to get close to categories of racing like yours, to see the fact that you are setting up to challenge those norms and that you are supportive of the fact that you have athletes, you know, breaking barriers in so many different ways. And I think that's such a key theme. And just before we, you know, we go on to the section of the podcast I enjoy the most, which is really delving into your life and career lessons, I want to just take a moment to talk about what I see as a really great milestone for you that is proof of all the great work that you've done despite the challenging year you had last year with COVID and because canceling your second year. We won't talk about that again because after my comment about you missing a betting year, I won't go back there. Got in trouble. I wanted to just say, isn't it really wonderful for you to know that you've now secured a great partnership with F1 where you're going to have these 8 supporting races this year to really give a greater platform to the female drivers that you've given because they deserve it. They deserve it because they're bloody talented. They're brilliant at what they do and that they've really helped to you know, give hope and real encouragement to people. And I think, you know, that's such a great stage for them to really demonstrate their pedigree.
Yeah, I mean, it is a great endorsement of our team here who have, in 1 year, who created a platform that is so professional that the greatest motorsport platform would have us on there in what is effectively our second year for 8 races.
Yeah.
So, you know, that is extraordinary. And also, it just shows the direction of travel that, you know, Formula One understand that diversity is key.
Yeah.
And, you know, as I was saying, I mean, I don't know what goes on in the mind of Formula One, I don't mean that as a criticism. What I'm not wanting to do is put words in their mouth.
I got you.
And they are doing it as, obviously, because it is going to help their platform that they have got more women.
As well.
You know,
yeah,
Liberty clearly made a stance about pit girls.
Yes.
That did make my eyebrows raise, certainly. And my criticism of it was not around actually what they were doing per se. But at the time they were there, it was the most obvious way that women were presented.
Yes.
You know, there was Claire Williams, okay. There was Monisha there too. There was hardly any, if any, female mechanics, very few engineers. But actually in the last 2 years, the world has changed very significantly.
So true.
What we want to do going forward is that we want to look at, you know, engineers in Formula One, the female engineers that are in Formula One teams and also the mechanics. And it's a point of pride for all of us at W Series if a significant percentage of them had come through W Series.
Yeah.
You know, we have got, I just don't want to say 50%, but I think we're pretty close at the moment to 50% of our engineers this year are going to be women.
That's incredible. You know, that's incredible to even be close, especially in motorsports, right? That's well above average. That's just extraordinary. You should be proud of it.
Absolutely. And we're really pushing forward, you know, female mechanics. Mm-hmm. And then, you know, where the female mechanics, you know, aren't as experienced, you know, we are putting them on apprenticeships so that they are being looked after and trained whilst they're at
WCS.
You create your own success by putting these women into these positions, because, you know, there are young girls who were at Brands Hatch who I was listening to some of their conversations. They were going, God, I never realized girls were mechanics. And, you know, and I think the only high profile mechanic was Kylie Minogue in Neighbours back in the day. You wouldn't have remembered that at all, but I think she started her acting career out as being a mechanic.
But I
do believe if you see it, you can be it. And actually, what we're creating is our own prophecy of what will happen in the future. Yeah. So that, for where, you know, we want to be as a business, you know, I believe that W Series can continue to stand on its own two feet as being a sport in and of itself. But we do want to be, you know, part of getting more girls involved in STEM subjects and, you know, more women involved in, you know, engineering and mechanics.
Yeah, no, that's so important. And I think that it opportunities that are being handed to women without shrinking them and making it narrow is something that's so important. And so, which leads us into a really good segue onto your career and life lessons, because I think there'll be gems in this that'll actually help open up a lot of opportunities for other women based on what you've been through. So without any sort of particular order, I asked you to sort of think about what are the most career defining moments or projects that you've worked on that have really helped, you know, to give you the success. And also, you know, not necessarily just success in terms of all the great things you've accomplished, but also a contentment with life and understanding your position and what you can and can't affect and where you can build for better.
Contentment in life, that's a bit controversial. I'm not sure I've ever been someone who's been content in life. I have, and I think that is just a that inability to be content in the here and now means that I'm always pushing, and that is a character trait that I don't necessarily think is great, and I wouldn't advocate that for everyone.
I was about to ask you how you found that played out in life for you, having that.
Well, I've never felt successful, and I feel content if I'm on a walk. I feel content, you know, if you know, I'm watching the sun go down and I just think of it, because we've had fantastic sunsets over the last weekend. There are moments of contentment, but it's interestingly, professionally, I have never really felt content or successful, and that must mean, well, I probably set quite a high bar. I'm probably, you know, I have very good friends who just, you know, over dinner parties and stuff, they just shake their heads and laugh and are rude to me about, oh, get over yourself, and just, but genuinely, I mean, I think I want more, because I'm possibly never going to be that happy in what I do. I'm happy in what I do, but I am not content to stay still.
Yeah, you're not ever going to be someone who sits on their laurels. And just what is it that creates that hunger in you? Because I see that as a kind of hunger that is really synonymous with a lot of, let's say, high profile athletes that are out there in the world. They talk about this mindset where it's never enough, not because it's not good enough, but because they know they can have better. So where does that hunger inside you come? You know, you were talking there about how it was such a great moment for you, one of the sort of life-defining happy moments for you, watching the girls out racing in 2019 for that first inaugural race. What is it in that moment that immediately switches you off to be like, okay, what's that next big thing we're going to do that's going to create a better feeling than the start line? What is it that drives that impulse in you?
I just think people are born that way.
Interesting. Yeah.
Yeah, I think it's just something that, I think it's you're born with maybe a psychiatrist could have a couple of hours with me and could say, oh, it's good because of your childhood. You know, I was brought up with, I'm one of four siblings. You know, we were born within 4 years, 4 months. So there's basically my mother had a child every year. You know, I had a very combative relationship with my two older brothers. You know, I'm the youngest of the family.
Yeah.
I grew up fighting.
And I
did a lot of sport myself, but I loved competition. I love winning. But once you win, okay, that's it. It's the next thing.
Yeah.
You know, and it's always the next thing. I mean, I describe, you know, the experience of W Series is basically being like, you know, climbing mountains. You get to the top of the mountain.
Yeah.
And then you just see the next mountain range in front of you. So there's never, there's always, so, you know, it was an extraordinary part of the evolution of W Series that, you know, we were broadcast live on Channel 4. Yeah. And that was like a very defining moment of W Series. Mm-hmm. And I know this is, you know, will be heard internationally, but for the people who don't know, Channel 4 is a, you know, terrestrial channel.
Yeah, that's a free-to-air broadcaster here in the UK.
And that meant that everyone in the UK could watch W Series if they had a TV. And we were the only motorsport in the UK that was live on the front five channels in the UK. And as a result of that, we became the second most watched motorsport in the UK in our first year. And we were the second most watched female sport in the UK. It was, that was an incredible deal for us to get. But, you know, the day that you have it and the day you get it, you know, okay, right, we've done that. That's fine. Isn't that fantastic? That's great. But I've got 99 other issues in front of me. So actually, they now need to be dealt with. So, you know, there's always more. There's always more. And it's, I think it's just that striving just to be better. And I don't mean that in any OCD way. You know, I'm naturally quite a messy person. So I'm not an unusual person at all. I just think I do look forward to my older age. You know, I'm reasonably old now, and that I will settle and I will sit down and I will look back and take my great contentment, enjoyment from it in future years. But when you're in the middle of it, there's just always another mountain range in front of you.
Yeah. No, that's so interesting. And I want to just go back there and catch you on something that I disagree with you. And I don't often disagree with my guests when you say I'm not an unusual person. I think you are. And last time you told me something really interesting that stayed with me, which was about your career being a squiggly career. Because when you look at the things that you've done, Catherine, I wouldn't say that they are very unusual. Not many people would move from being a solicitor in a practice that they had difficulty setting out in, turn it around to carve a career from themselves at the beginning of a new discipline, and then go on to become a corporate financier making huge deals like you did to then come and set up a really world's first in what you're doing at W Series. So I would challenge it and say, is it a case that you don't want to think of yourself as unusual, to sort of not set yourself apart in this sort of bubble of I'm so special, look at me? Or is it a case that maybe it's a chance for you to now reflect back and actually own the fact that you have been driving in your own lane for a long time? And that's a great thing, I think, because it challenges people to look at ways in which they can do better and keep chasing that next mountain range.
Well, we go back to my previous comment, is that I've never felt successful. So years, I felt as though that I'd really mucked up my career because I had never kept doing the same thing. So a squiggly career was actually described to me by someone at a conference that that I'd been at, because I thought, well, I started off being a lawyer. Look how successful all my friends are now, being sort of very senior partners in big law firms, earning huge amounts of money. Well, I've been that, didn't I? When I left the law, I wanted to get closer to sport. Mm-hmm. And I went into sports marketing, both as a lawyer, but also as a sports marketing practitioner. And I did that for 2 or 3 years. But that I found academically or intellectually unrewarding, because it was quite repetitive. And the wonderful thing about the professions is that every client you have presents its new set of problems. I really found my spiritual home when I went into the city and I went into banking. You know, deal making was very much, you know, that's, I mean, I know it's sort of lots of alpha males are involved in it, but, you know, maybe that's you know, I share more similarities and characteristics than I would care to accept. But, I mean, I did enjoy my investment banking years, you know, enormously. I mean, I've been involved in some really interesting deals, but it wasn't just the deals themselves, actually. It was the individuals, you know. They're just, I you know, had some fascinating clients, you know, lots and lots of entrepreneurs, you know, people who have started businesses from scratch, people who have transformed existing businesses. But, you know, my colleagues were great characters, and also, you know, had some really fascinating clients too. So, you know, I enjoyed that enormously. But again, because I went to it sort of relatively late in life, I always had this feeling that I'd sort of messed up my career because I didn't get it right first time. So, but this squiggly career has allowed me to do W Series, because W Series would never have happened unless I'd had those three experiences. Because I had, you know, to start something from scratch, you needed to have read the, you know, 1,010 business plans that I had read, you know, maybe even more than that, you know, through when you're doing, you know, M&A and fundraising for businesses. Obviously, understanding legal structures is very important. You know, when I, you know, first went into the city, I was an equities analyst for a couple of years before I went into corporate finance, and therefore I learned to read a balance sheet. So that gave me a lot of experience too. And obviously the sports marketing experience made me understand that side of the business too. So I had forever believed that I had actually mucked up my career and I'd got it wrong. But it was the squiggliness of that career that allowed me to do this. So whilst I, you know, I'm not a motorsport or wasn't a motorsport person, I could do a lot of the other aspects of the business, certainly in the other stage. But, you know, W Series has been a success because it's been a village. You know, I took it to, you know, a certain level and a very low level, and, you know, and it's my colleagues and, you know, our major investor and David Coulthard and Dave Ryan that has made it what it is. You know, I'm hanging on by my fingertips for the ride at the moment.
I don't think so. I think without, you know, a leader's vision and an idea that people can't believe in, it's hard to get on board and take things to that level. And I think that's a, I know you don't like this. You have to just sit with this one, Catherine. You, without you and without your vision and your tenacity and your talent, I don't think W Series exists. I really don't. And there's a lot of things that you would definitely would be welcome to disagree with me on, but I'm really confident about this one, that without you and what you've done and the bravery that you've shown and the great humility that you do every time you go out and you chase that next big thing. I think when people see that level of hunger, desire, and drive, there's something that draws people to those kind of figures. At least I can speak to this from my own experience that it definitely is. So I would say that that's really what I take as the learnings from everything you've shared with me in the last sort of hour that we've been talking. And I think you should never change. I hope that you are happy one day and that I hope that you see yourself as successful because you bloody well are. So, and I didn't tell you this at the beginning, but there's a fining system on my podcast for self-deprecation. And through your reflections there, you definitely had a few fines there, but I'll let you off because you're a lawyer and I didn't tell you that at the beginning. So I don't want you to sue me. So, but before we do round off, what I would like to do is take some time just looking at everything. We're sort of 10, 20 years on from now. What would you like your legacy to be? What would you like to overhear someone say about you that would make everything feel worth it?
I think it's what I see is that vision in the future where women are integrated into all areas of motorsport. And those girls who maybe are just being born now will go, well, what was all the fuss about? And they won't know because, you know, being a woman in motorsport is perfectly normal and natural. You know, there are lots of us everywhere. You know, the women are being successful, you know, women are involved in and successfully racing in Formula One, dare I say, you know, winning a Formula One race, but certainly, you know, that would be my vision. But also, you know, a big takeaway for me would be, you know, if you have a dream, you know, go and do it. You know, if you fail, that's the worst thing that can happen. You fail. Yeah. Who cares? Just pick yourself up. Everyone fails. Pick yourself up and get on. But if it does succeed, you know, it is, you can achieve really extraordinary things. And, you know, a couple of times I very nearly gave up. And my husband is the person who made me carry on and said, you know, there is an idea here. You know you are getting interest. You know you are getting traction. You know, the hardest thing was to raise the money. And I just, you know, a couple of times I just believed it wasn't going to happen. And he was the person, you know, who said, you know, carry on. So, you know, if I have a message for people, you know, going on in the future, and if people, you know, a theme to this is people's careers, you know, I think it's, you know, it's a message of, you know, choose your life partners carefully, because he has, you know, at times, you know, became the main carer for Hamish, certainly, you know, between, you know, when, you know, this, about, you know, 2 to 4 years ago, he was unquestionably the main carrier because I was working 7 days a week. You know, you've got to, if you want to progress with crazy dreams, you know, you've got to have people around you that support you, because if you don't, you know, they're either going to bring you down or it's just not going to be physically capable of doing that. So yes, whoever your partner is, just make sure that, you know, that they're prepared to, you know, help and support you.
Yeah, that's great advice. No, that's really great advice, and things that I think is really important and very pertinent for both men and women to really consider. 100%. Yeah. Nice. Well, it's been amazing to speak with you, Catherine. I don't care what you say. I think you're incredibly successful. And I hope that one day, I wish this was a visual podcast so everyone could see Catherine right now. I think I'm never going to be invited to a W Series race, but I'll take the heat. I'm quite happy to. So I just want to say a huge thank you for your time.
Look, I'm flushed. I can even see myself on screen.
You know what? I'm pretty proud. I don't think there are many people who could claim to have made you blush in life. So I'm pretty proud. So I'm pretty proud of myself for that. So I just want to say thank you. I wish you all the best. I'll always be rooting for you. And I think it's incredibly fitting that you are paving the way forward for a new normal. So thank you to everybody for listening in to another episode of In Her Corner. I've been with the absolutely fantastic Catherine Bondmere.